This week on the show, David Price implodes. We react with Mike Shalen, longtime Red Sox beat writer. The NBA Finals continue tonight. Mike Zago of Snap Call Sports joins us to break it down. And yes, we even touch on some soccer. The U.S. with a big World Cup qualifier Sunday night. Jimmy Young enlightens us on the up-and-coming star for the U.S. men's national team. All that and more on the way. Calling It starts right now. Welcome into Calling It, Alex Barth, Alex Lovewitz. Another week, a lot to talk about, a full show for you today. Four guests, so we'll get right into it. We'll start with Mike Shalen. He's been a Red Sox beat writer for over 30 years, currently working for the New Hampshire Union-Ledger. Mike, thanks for coming on the show.
Well, it's leader, so let's correct that right off.
Leader, oh man, wow, I'm off to a rough start. Speaking of rough starts, look, the news keeps breaking right after our shows. 2 weeks ago, it was Tiger. The day after, this week, David Price. We love to bash him on the show. Maybe it was us that pushed him over the edge. I don't know. Maybe he listened. But he went off on a couple of reporters this week. Mike, you've been around the Red Sox for a while. You've been in locker rooms for a while. Have you ever seen a player act towards the media like David Price did this week?
Oh, yeah. Are you kidding me? I was in the middle of the Rich Gossage take it to the fat man upstairs tirade. I wasn't actually in the room, but it was he was reacting to a headline in my over my story, which we get blamed for writing headlines too, which we don't do. But I was in the next room, heard the walls were shaking, and I've been on the wrong end of those things, and you hope that they. My problem with what David did was I just thought that there's no reason for him to be upset. You know, I mean, unfortunately, the 0-8 thing, in the postseason is something he has to live with. He is the worst postseason pitcher of all time. And I mean of somebody who is a good pitcher, who is a very good pitcher. And I think to be honest, I've kind of traced this a little bit. My amateur sleuth ways, I think that this goes back to there's a guy, Felger and Maz are simulcast in the afternoon on CSN, and they've got a guy named, last name is Murray, Jim Murray.
Jim Murray, yep.
Who has been slamming Price and doing impressions of him and all this stuff, and my feeling is that when first of all, Price had to be looking at his phone during the game because Shaughnessy wrote this thing before the game, and Evan Drellich from CSN tweeted something about it. So the CSN connection, I think, might have been what set him off. David is an intelligent young man. He's a deep, thoughtful guy. He's a guy that I would have bet against being a success in Boston. Because of his demeanor, but he just went off, and I thought Peter Abraham put it pretty well today as far as his, not talking except on daisy pitches. That's what Chris Sale does anyway. That's not unusual or uncommon for a starting pitcher, because what do you have to talk to him? Now, it is good sometimes to be able to talk to a guy the day before his start to kind of write a preview or whatever. But I think this was just an unfortunate situation, and I don't think Drellich was his actual target, is what I'm trying to say.
So do you think his outburst was warranted? Do you think Boston media has been unfair to him in any regard?
No. No, I once got yelled at by Jim Rice for putting his salary in the paper, and the unfortunate part of the story was he said that somebody tried to swipe his kid out of the schoolyard because I put his salary in the paper. Well, at the time, Jimmy was the top paid player in baseball, and his name was almost like Jim Rice, the highest paid player in baseball. Well, it is David Price, 0-8 in the postseason. And, I don't care if he goes 22-1 during this season, which he's still eligible. He's still, eligible to do because he's only 1-1. But if he goes 22-1 during the season, it doesn't matter if he doesn't win in the postseason. He's got that albatross around his neck. There's no question about it. And what he did last week is only going to serve to make it worse. I think the person served the least in this whole thing was David Price, and that's the unfortunate part for him.
How much was his tough start in Yankee Stadium? How much of that do you think had to do with his mental state following the altercation?
No, the Yankees beat him up last year too. He had a decent record against them until last year, but he was 1-3 against them last year, and ran into what has become a potent New York Yankee lineup, almost reminiscent of their Mantle and Maris teams. Forget their championship. Their championship teams didn't win with power. These guys are just pummeling people right now, 55 runs in 5 games. But no, I don't think it had anything to do with it. Again, it's possible because he is a sensitive kid, but I really, I think it just happened. Now let's see what happens facing the worst team in baseball this week. On his, I think he pitches Tuesday, if I'm not mistaken. So he'll be on his home mound, and let's see what the reaction of the fans. Fans are strange. Drew Pomeranz got an ovation last night walking off the field after 4 and a third inning. So we don't really know what fans are thinking anyway. But I think, if David has a problem with the Phillies, then I think there might be a problem.
Is his relationship with Boss and the media, the city, everything, the way he's pitched, is it beyond repair with that option looming? Is it up in the air whether or not he picks that up or not?
Well, it's not an option. It's an opt-out. And if he doesn't pitch well this year and next year, where's he going to get $150 million? Whatever's left. I think, no, it'll be 3 years, so he'll be down to a mere $127 million. Now, just like the Tanaka situation in New York right now, he has an opt-out after this year, and the Yankees are already on their knees praying that he takes it. Now, could I see things getting bad enough to where David Price just wants out of here at all costs, which I guess $127 million would be all costs? Sure, it could happen, but I don't think this is going to linger. He took a lot of heat last year, and most guys would be pretty happy with a 17-9 regular season. Now, again, he did not have a good postseason start, so that's what it's all about with this guy. And until he wins in the postseason, it's never going to go away. He's one of the better pitchers of his of the time he's in the major leagues. He's been one of the better pitchers in the league, but he's got that thing around it. He's that albatross around his neck, and it's the only way to get rid of it. It's kind of a catch-22, because if he doesn't pitch well, he might not get a chance to get rid of it, because he won't be in the postseason. So now another thing you got to think about too is how healthy is he. And you wonder about that. Tanaka has pitched for several years with a slight tear in his elbow. We don't know exactly what the Price injury was, but I think the results of the coming weeks will be as much about how healthy he is as opposed to, whether that tirade got to him.
So it's not like David Price is the only starting pitcher, underperforming for the Red Sox. We saw last week Porcello, not the best start. We've seen it with Pomeranz, who's kind of fallen off. It seems like every time he goes out there, he's throwing 120 pitches. What are the chances Dombrowski goes out and tries to add another starting pitcher to this rotation?
I think the chances are very good. You've already lost Steven Wright for the season. You've got a shaky situation with Rodriguez's right knee. You don't know, they say he's coming along a little quicker than they expected, but this seems to be a problem area for him. I think this is the third time he's had this subluxation. How's that for a big word? But, there are problems. Will the real Rick Porcello please stand up? He was 9-15 2 years ago. And then last year he was given 6.67 runs a game, which was a high in the major leagues. He's not getting that support now, and now he's already lost twice as many games as he lost last year. So now he faces the Phillies tonight. Now if he has trouble again tonight, he's given up more hits than any pitcher in the league. And if he has trouble tonight, then you start thinking, that Now you gotta. You forget the Cy Young. Cy Young will seem like it's 20 years ago. But I would think that there's a definite need for a pitcher and a third baseman. There's no question about it in my mind.
Again, we're talking with Red Sox beat writer Mike Shalen. You actually just jumped to my questions there, Mike. First off, with the pitcher, to expand to the bullpen a little bit. Issues last night for Heath Hembree, blowing the game with the bases loaded against Detroit, although some of that probably had to do with Pomerantz. You have Carson Smith on his way back, Pat Light, Tommy Lane, a couple of guys Dombrowski likes just getting released. Can we expect a shakeup in the bullpen? Fernando Abad is a guy people think might be on the way out. And then at third base, sorry to jump you with two questions here, Pablo Sandoval just continues to not be able to play baseball, frankly. How short is his leash?
Well, you know, you've got a $51 million price tag on that one. You know, Peter Abraham, again, he wrote an excellent notes column today, but he, you know, I mean, do you just swallow $51.5 million? I don't know. I don't know what the answer is. I know nobody wants him. I think the biggest problem with Sandoval was shown the other night when his inability to charge slowly hit balls. He's a statue over there. I don't know what they do about that. I really don't. Like Todd, you know, people say Todd Frazier's available and the White Sox are looking to sell. There's no question about that. Todd Frazier's a guy who hit 75 home runs the last 2 years. So I don't know where they go with that. The bullpen has been, has been good except for what happened last night.
So,
I mean, to me, these guys have been better than anybody could have expected. You know, you got Thornburg and they're taking a lot of heat for trading Travis Shaw for Thornburg, and you know, Thornburg was supposed to be your eighth inning guy, and he hasn't pitched, and there's no indication that he will. You know, if Carson Smith comes back, that will help. But when you look at the overall work of Barnes and Hembree and Kelly, it's been good. Now, does Tommy Lane fit into the picture? Yeah, maybe he does instead of Abad, but I don't think that's, you know, Robbie Scott's been good in his role. I don't think that's an issue. That's a cosmetic change more than anything. I mean, you saw when Abad pitched last night. And I think that, I don't think the bullpen is their problem. I really don't. I think if you had to list problem areas, I don't see the bullpen as being anywhere near the top of their to-do list. And it's also notoriously a weak spot for Dave Dombrowski. He has not been good at putting together bullpens. We saw that dreadful Tiger bullpen work the last 3 days, and he's sitting up in his box, and he built both of those teams, and both of them are seriously flawed baseball teams.
So how much of the Red Sox inconsistencies come down to Dave Dombrowski? How much is he to blame in this whole fiasco?
Well, first of all, they're what, 5 or 6 games over 500?
Yeah.
And I think if you look around the major leagues and you look at the Cubs at 500, you look at the Mets 5 games under 500, the Texas Rangers who needed a weekend sweep to just be relevant again, there's a lot of teams that are underachieving. There's no question about it. Kansas City, Toronto. Toronto has come on, but they're still under 500. Generally speaking, the Red Sox are in good shape, and they have endured going the first 2 months without David Price, and we can talk about David's problems all we want, but the fact is that they're a better team if he's there for the first 2 months of the season. They lost David Ortiz, and you can't snap your fingers and replace David Ortiz, and I think one of the reasons for the low home run total, which I believe is 58, and the Yankees are already over 100, one of the reasons is the diet of pitches that everybody else is seeing, that there's no urgent need to throw fastballs to Xander Bogaerts because there's no Poppy behind him. And I think that makes, and Hanley Ramirez has been a major disappointment, both in his unwillingness to play first base and his lack of production. I think that, Moreland has been a pleasant surprise for me anyway, as far as I think he's been better offensively and not as good defensively as we were told when he got here. Pedroia was hurt, and his power obviously is not what it was during his heyday. He's had all kinds of hand and wrist injuries. And I just think that it's you got a streaky guy in center field. You know, you love to watch him catch fly balls, but he really is the little girl with the curl. You don't know what you're going to get on a given day. Mookie's 40 points, 50 points under where he was last year. You know, Benintendi, for all the, you know, marvelous accolades he's been getting, is still a 265 hitter with okay power. They don't have a 10 home run guy yet, and that's, you know, this is the Boston Red Sox playing at Fenway Park. They don't have a double digit home run guy 61 games into the season. So there are a lot of problems, no question about it. But I think that they have some resources to still go out and make some deals. I think Todd Frazier would look good in that lineup, but the lineup is already righty heavy. So I don't know if they ride this out and they see what happens, because they don't have a lot of what you call tradable parts in the major leagues, and that includes people that you wouldn't trade. You know, like the killer bees, all four of the bees. You're not trading those guys, so they really don't have much to offer. The Brock Holt thing hurts more than you can even imagine. You know, this is a player who was able to go out and give them good performances at wherever you needed him. You could put him anywhere on the field, and you don't have him, and you don't know when you're going to have him. So it's it's kind of a complicated situation, and you don't hear a lot as far as, you know, trade rumors are concerned. I thought that the deal he made for Sale was expensive, but certainly worth it because of what you've gotten out of Sale already. Although he has been more human after that ridiculous start. So there's really nothing. There's nothing you can point to with this team at this time where you would say, my goodness, this is going so well, except for Kimbrel. And I'd probably Sale. Those are two of the all-stars, I think, that as of now, Bogaerts and his three-whatever batting average is probably online to be another all-star. Mookie, as far as the voting is concerned. But, they're just not having great years all at once. And that's not a ticket because, you know, there's some excitement going on in the Bronx. And you've got two power hitters who are the kind of people you don't want to walk away from your TV set. I know yesterday I saw Judge's 495 foot home run, and then went to take a shower, to get ready for work, and missed another home run. So there's excitement in the Bronx, and I think that the biggest problem with this Red Sox team right now is that there's no, other than Kimbrel, who has been unbelievable, there's no excitement. And how charged up can you get for a guy who throws 12 to 15 pitches on a given night? And there is also speculation that he's already pitched more than he's ever pitched before in his career, so you got to keep an eye on him too.
Mike,
how's that for optimism?
That's some optimism you can only find in the New England sports media. Mike Shalen of the New Hampshire Union Leader. You can follow him on Twitter at MSKotche, MSCOT.
That's my name, Michael Scott Shalen.
Ah, gotcha. Okay, so there's how you follow him on Twitter for more updates on the Red Sox. Mike, thank you so much for coming on and taking the time.
Anytime, guys.
Colin, it is a Snap Call Sports production. Snap Call Sports is available for iPhone or Android download. Snap Call, the game within the game.
No sleep till...
Welcome back to Calling It. The NBA Finals could conclude tonight. It continues. Seems like it's been going on forever with, you know, 3-4 days in between games, but it's given us some stuff to talk about. Joining us on the phone right now, the production manager for Snap Call Sports, Mike Zago. Mike, how you doing?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me, guys.
All right, so we're finally at, game 5 tonight? It's been going on for 3 weeks.
We made it.
This is pathetic that it's spaced out like this.
Game 5, they work so closely hand-in-hand with the NHL, man. Those guys didn't want to compete with each other at all.
But
so
they've done it in the past, and they've just gone every other day. We've had days without either.
Yeah, now they want to do 2 days off for travel, which means if they bump into each other on the same day, one of them moves back, just like, you know, NBA would have been last night. But they didn't want to do that, so here we are.
So do you – I'll just get to the chase. Tonight, game five, do the Cavs have any shot at extending the series in Golden State?
Yeah, they have a shot. I mean, you know, it's basketball, man. Anyone has a shot. If they come out and shoot like they did last time, nobody on the planet beats them. I don't care how many All-Stars you have on the team. Now, is that going to happen again? Probably not. But, look, Vegas has it as an 8.5-point spread last I checked. However often that happens, whether it's regular season or finals, probably the same kind of odds tonight. They just have to withstand those long, crazy runs that the Warriors go on, which is difficult. Even when they were up and they scored 49 in the first quarter, I still didn't feel like it was over yet. And it's going to be much like that tonight. It's never going to be over. They have to continuously grind every possession and pray that the Warriors don't hit four threes in a row. And that's all they can do.
Isn't that all you can do against a super team? Look, I know we were talking a little bit off the air. You guys are hoping for Cavs win tonight to get it going. I wanted the Cavs to win going into the series too, so Durant will opt out and come to the Celtics. It's my little pipe dream. As of right now, it's still alive. But I'm so just done with this series. It's been blowout after blowout after blowout. Now we have to hear it nauseam. The 3-1, the Warriors are up 3-1 narrative. Just end it. I'm done with the NBA. It's been a terrible year. The playoffs were absolute garbage. You guys really want more of this?
So I do, and I came up with a pretty good but nerdy comparison for why I like it. Okay. So I like comic book movies, right? The superhero movies.
Yeah.
So I'm into those, right? And a lot of people are. And that's kind of how I've viewed this series. Like, yeah, I like the Hulk and Iron Man movies like by themselves and Captain America and stuff. But when you get to the Avengers movies, right, when they're all on the same screen, that's the coolest stuff in the world. And so, like, that's how I see this series. Like, it's 7, 8 All-Stars. I don't even know how many off the top of my head. But there's a million All-Stars on the court. All the best players in the world are finally squaring off against each other. To a certain point, this is going to sound really silly, but like the score doesn't even matter necessarily.
No, it's an All-Star game. You're proving what I've been saying for weeks. It's an All-Star game.
You know, and I love the All-Star game, so maybe I'm just, you know, I'm one of the few. I get it. But it's great basketball. It really is. Like, you got to sit back and appreciate seeing the Warriors do this. We're going to look back in a while and say, oh my God, were we watching the best team that's ever done this?
So I don't know how... I don't know how long you took crafting that argument. I'm going to put it in a coffin. I'm sorry. But, you know, to counter your Avengers, you could say, okay, so these are the two best superheroes, Batman versus Superman. Wasn't that movie a total flop?
Horrible.
I liked that movie.
All right. So there we go. It's a fundamental difference.
This is exactly the argument.
No, really, though. I mean, I get it. But I even enjoyed some of the other rounds. I mean, I know the scores weren't tight. But think back, and you saw some really great performances. You saw Isaiah Thomas. He was entertaining to watch. I'm trying to pull on your Boston heartstrings a little bit, but I mean, John Wall was cool. Kawhi Leonard, before he got hurt, was putting on a show. There were Russell Westbrook, James Harden. There's a lot of guys that you could get behind to watch a game and say, wow, that guy's awesome at what he does. Now, the scores didn't work out to be perfect, and in a small sample size, sometimes that's going to happen, I guess. Obviously, we want close games that come down to buzzer beaters and stuff like that. It's more exciting. That's why March Madness will pretty much blow away the NBA always. But, you know, you still got to take something positive out of it. I still enjoy watching the Stars do what they do.
But, I mean, we knew going into it, you can talk about James Harden going off, Kawhi Leonard, whatever, Isaiah Thomas having the playoff he did, but we all knew the entire time who was going to make to the finals, and now we're here, and it's been super disappointing. For me, it's not like this is a special event, this is historic. I just think that this is something that, you know, we expected going in, and we were hoping for this finals that actually paid off into, you know, hopefully a 7-game series. And Golden State comes out and wins the first 3 games. And now Cleveland, even though they won pretty handedly the other day, I still don't think they're winning tonight. I think they're done. They're going back to Golden State. and this series is going to be over. And in my opinion, the NBA is kind of ruined. The next 5 years, the Cavaliers aren't going to stand a chance against this team. I honestly think that. I think it's going to be Golden State every single year, and we're going to know that every single year. And that's why I guess I'm a pessimist, but I look at this as something that's really going to affect the NBA for years to come.
I think that's fair in a way, because it's hard to say that the Warriors aren't going to win for a long time if they keep this thing together, which they can. We'll see if they do. But, you know, you would have said that about a lot of different teams over the years. Like, first of all, I mean, the same people that say this is a garbage series are a lot of the people that are making that, you know, I hate the LeBron-MJ comparison, I really do, but of course I'm the one that's going to bring it up. And people were okay with MJ winning 6 rings and double three-peating. And I don't remember really hearing that back then, that it was so obvious that the Bulls were going to win. Maybe there was a little bit of chatter, but it wasn't like it is now. And even then, it was super obvious that Jordan was going to roll through. But everyone loved watching him do it.
MJ wasn't playing with Barkley and Ewing on his team. That's the difference.
And he didn't join the Pistons.
but you know, when Horace Grant left that Bulls team, they brought in Steve Kerr and Dennis Rodman, who were very – I'm not saying they were KD or anything.
No, the consular pieces.
They reloaded, you know. And so I see this as the same kind of thing, I guess. I know I'm stretching a little bit, but my point is, too, we thought the Heat, when LeBron went there, were going to rip off a bunch of wins in a row. And the Warriors at the time – we're quietly building this little machine that was about to go off. And so who's to say that someone isn't building that machine right now to knock up the Warriors?
We talked to, and the Timberwolves are a great point, but we talked about this last week a little bit. If Durant doesn't go to Golden State, it completely changes the narrative of this, and it's probably a lot more entertaining. Granted, is it the same series? Probably not. But those Miami teams, those weren't as good as this Golden State team. We thought at the time they were going to roll off, but we haven't seen anything like this Golden State team. But it is an all-star team.
It is. Okay, so let's say Durant went to your Celtics, right?
Yeah.
And then you would have seen a solid battle in the Eastern Conference Finals. I'm just going to say LeBron comes out and wins for the sake of my argument. So wouldn't we be seeing the same thing that the Warriors are doing now, but it would just be the Cavs, would it not? I mean, I don't – either way – there was such dominance on both sides that if one wasn't there, the other one would still be doing it. And I just feel like it was better that we had these two teams on a collision course. So at least we could build up to something. Now, it hasn't been a perfect series yet. But if there was only one dominant team as opposed to two, that would be worse, right? I mean, then you would know that all this team is just going to roll through everybody, and that would be more boring.
But I mean, you're getting into semantics. We're better off with 5 or 6 dominant teams than two.
Yeah, and I think it'll balance itself out naturally. I mean, this was an anomaly. The cap went up a ton. The Warriors had a bunch of players with reasonable salaries because they drafted really well. They didn't cheat, you know? They didn't do anything wrong. We can get on Durant personally for going to a team that beat him. That's fine. But this was just a weird year where they got an extra $20 million to spend from the commissioner, and so did everyone else. But no one else would have complained if Durant went to the Celtics or, you know, whoever else he was meeting with. It's just because he went to the good team. And so, you know, kind of sour grapes at a certain point. If I was a Warriors fan, I would be ecstatic.
And we're talking,
I'm not going to feel like I wouldn't be.
And we're talking to Mike Zago of Snap Call Sports. Mike, how do you see this postseason affecting the regular season next year and years to come? You see the Cavs having the 2 seed. They had no problem making it to the finals, only losing 1 game. Golden State entered the finals at 12-0. Do you think there's going to still be the same competitiveness in the regular season, next season, the year after that?
That's a good question. I mean, I think they need to do something about the resting, especially on the road, screwing the fans that go to see those teams. That's terrible. I assume the commissioner is going to do something about that. Also, resting in the national TV games I don't like. But the truth is, this is how sports are now. I mean, everywhere. Look at baseball. You see guys rest games when Cal Ripken was ripping off 1,000 games in a row not that long ago. I mean, I don't know how to fix that. When I look at the standings and remember that the Celtics were the number one seed over the Cavaliers, this isn't a knock to the Celtics, obviously, but you kind of just throw up your hands and you're like, come on, man. Nobody thought that they were a better team. And so I think we're going to just end up seeing more of that. I don't know what they do necessarily. Teams are starting to play for the playoffs. These are long seasons. there's no easy way to get through them. You don't want to be hurt when it comes to this. And that's another thing. Look at both of these, the Cavs and the Warriors. They're very healthy. I mean, that's surprising. And so goes back to my point before, you don't really know what's going to happen. And I think it'll balance itself out because just unforeseen circumstances, man. Like, people get hurt. People get older fast. And dynasties just very rarely last as long as you think they're going to last. And once these two are over, the league will be back to competitive balance in the regular season as well. And, you know, you won't be able to rest as much because you'll really be fighting for that top seed. So this is just a weird time. We're going to look back in 20 years and say, man, remember when those teams just dominated and went to 3, 4, 5 finals in a row? Like, you look back now at the Lakers and Celtics. They're about to do a 30 for 30 on it tomorrow on ESPN, I think. And that was a cool time. Like, it's easy to look back and appreciate that now. But at the time, when I was a Knicks fan, I'm like, this stinks, man. We're going to lose to Celtics over and over. So I think that it's just cyclical. I think that's how the league has always been. But we're trapped in the moment right now.
Look, ultimately, it's about getting the regular season to matter again. Speaking of which, before we wrap it up here, the NHL is a league that does a fantastic job of getting their regular season to matter. You had an 8 seed in the Stanley Cup Finals. They did lose last night to Pittsburgh Penguins, back-to-back Stanley Cup championships. Because we should mention it in the show, the championship was awarded last night. Both of you, Alex, you go first. Just real quick, 1 minute, your thoughts on the Stanley Cup Finals.
It was great. Pekka Rinne really crapped the bed, though. He cannot play on the road. He really can't. And obviously, officiating, big problem in the NHL.
Yeah.
That goal in the second period, they called it off because the ref didn't see the puck.
That's going to be a long offseason.
That's going to be a tough pill to swallow for that guy.
It's so hard to swallow. I mean, I don't like to be the guy that bashes the refs, but that one was really, really
bad. You can't not go after the refs today.
Change the series. If they win that game, you don't know what happens. So it was sad. It was sad to see. But look, I mean, Pittsburgh was a better team. They deserve to lift the cup. I'm not a fan of them, but they were better all year. They were the best team around. So you got to give it to them. Another dynasty in the brewing.
Ultimately, I think we got a good, not great series. But I will say this. It's great to see Nashville as a hockey town. I love that city. I've been there a couple times. Broadway in Nashville, Rippies, all those honky-tonks, great place to be. Indeed. So glad to see Nashville being embraced as a sports city. I love the way they embraced it back with all the concerts and the music. And Titans are on the doorstep, too, so we may not be done with the Music City. Mike Zago of Snap Call Sports, thank you very much for coming on. NBA Finals, if you're listening to this on Monday, is tonight. If not, you missed it. But, you know, if the Cavs win, pull off another game, it'll all be on Snap Call Sports. Mike, thanks for coming on.
Thanks a lot.
Colin, it is a Snap Call Sports production. Snap Call Sports is available for iPhone or Android download. Snap Call. The game within the game.
Welcome back into Call That. Alex Barth, Alex Lovewitz, and our producer Jimmy Young, the sports director of Snap Call Sports, joins us at the table now. He was knocking down my door last night, U.S. and Mexico in a World Cup qualifier. Wanted to make sure we got it on the show. So, Jimmy, we'll save the best for last here, a little football.
I like that. And more importantly, 3 games last night, all at the same time in the marketplace. You had the Stanley Cup final game with Pittsburgh. You had the Red Sox against the Tigers. And you had the U.S. versus Mexico in international World Cup qualifying soccer. And I ask you, now you had 3 TVs going, Alex, so you get the prize.
2 and an iPad, but yeah.
Okay. Alex?
I did not watch soccer. I was in
didn't ask that question. I wonder which game you did watch. You had 3 choices.
I watched every game but that. I was flipping between the Red Sox and the Stanley Cup Finals. I abandoned the Red Sox once Heath Hembry gave up that grand slam, and I switched solely to the Stanley Cup.
All right, so
I didn't watch a minute. No, that's not true. I watched the entire soccer game, start to finish, flipped over to see the end of the hockey game.
And then you still could have watched the Red Sox for 2 hours.
And
that
I
game
still
was
watched
so long.
The Red Sox until after midnight.
But anyway, about that soccer game last night, 1-1 draw, U.S. and Mexico. for those of us like myself, like Alex, who haven't watched this team in 3 years since the World Cup ended, some familiar names, some not so familiar. I know you want to get into, and feel free to strangle me if I get it wrong, Pulisic.
Very good. You got it right.
Christian Pulisic, the 18-year-old phenom. But big picture to start, what is the identity of this team, and is what we saw last night a good barometer for what we can expect to see from Bruce Arena's squad?
First of all, I love the fact that there's an American head coach of the U.S. national soccer team, okay? No disrespect to a great player, Jurgen Klinsmann, and a coach who actually did what he needed to do when he came in to head up the national soccer team program. Very good showings for the U.S. national team in the World Cups. You know, that's probably the next great story that hasn't been written in American sport history.
Well, they said once the Cubs won the World Series, there are no more good stories left.
That's the story. That is the best story in my regard, because I grew up with the game in this country. And back to your original question about this result from last night, this is the measuring stick. When you can go into Mexico City, 86,000 crazy Mexicans in the stands in Estadio Azteca at altitude, people throwing bags of urine at you. I mean, this is just what you do when you go to these international games, right? By the way, one of the grossest things I've ever heard in soccer. But anyway, and get a result. And a tie is a result on the road. It's one of those foreign things, again, to a lot of American sports fans that they don't understand.
Yeah, I really was. I wanted to see him keep going. I'll stay around for the other 20 minutes. I'm not a fan of ties. I think that's part of the problem.
It's not a problem. Catching on. No. What the problem is, you can't accept that a tie is a good result, because the team you're playing against is the team that you want to qualify above. So they did not get a three-point advantage on you by playing against you.
But you didn't get any advantage on them either.
Perfect,
and I guess
but at home,
it's a cultural thing.
But it's at home. You want to win your games at home. 3 points at home, 1 point on the road. That's almost as good as a win.
So do they play Mexico again in the U.S.?
Yes, okay. They've already lost to Mexico. That's how it all started.
Interesting, okay.
That they lost for the first time.
Oh, in Dallas, I remember that.
For the first time on U.S. turf to Mexico, which was bad. You know, usually they like to play the Mexicans in Columbus, Ohio, when it's like 20 degrees below zero.
So last night, a good result.
A very good result. Not a great performance. They had a great performance Thursday against Trinidad and Tobago when they win 2-0, and they dominated the game. They controlled the ball for over 80%, and it was a exceptional performance by the U.S. national team to get those 3 points away, which was important. I think it was away. Was it away? I think it was away. Was it away? Anybody?
I had it on for 5 seconds, maybe.
I think it was away. It's not a big deal. It's still 3 points. That's the way I look at it. And more importantly, I am now a groupie. I'm a groupie of this kid. This Christian Pulisic kid is the best American soccer player I've ever seen. I'm going to say it now. He's 18 years old. I've never seen a player with the foot skill that he has. I've never seen a player with the poise at his level. He's played in the German Bundesliga at age 17 and 18 now. He has scored. He's the youngest scorer ever in the history of the U.S. national men's soccer team, scoring those two goals against Trinidad and Tobago. And he's just exciting to watch. I'm not sure any of you guys will ever appreciate how tough it is to play that game at the highest level when you're 18 years old. I mean, I was at a youth soccer game on the fields of Needham this weekend watching some friends' kids play. And I'm saying to myself, okay, this kid Pulisic is a year older than these guys, and he's playing in Mexico tonight. So it's just incredible. I'm very, very excited about it. You guys got to bear with me, but just because I grew up with this game. I love it.
So is he enough to get soccer kind of out of this hole in this country?
First of all, I don't think it's in a hole. I really believe it's here to stay. You cannot deny the fact that Major League Soccer is a successful professional league and the most successful.
To put some more data behind it, to put more data behind that question, they came out with that SI or ESPN came out with that list of the 100 most famous athletes in the world. And obviously had the Ronaldos on there and the Messis, but no American soccer
my buddy
players.
On there? Pele.
No, it was active.
Athlete. Oh, active. Okay.
So, and look, the MLB didn't have any players on there, and that's an issue for them. So let's apply this to American soccer. Does Pulisic have, and you seem to be pretty set on the fact that, yes, he does have what it takes on the field to be a superstar, but it's more than that. Is he the whole package? Does he have the on-the-field talent and the off-the-field charisma, like we talked about last week with Tiger Woods?
Yeah, markability.
Those intangibles soccer is big in America, but it's still lacking that superstar, much like the MLB is. Does he have the potential to be that guy?
Let me put it to you this way. He's an 18-year-old kid, and he was on record 24 hours before the U.S.-Mexico game basically saying, hey, there's no reason in the world why we can't beat Mexico. I love that attitude. Everybody in America.
So the 18-year-old superstar. We've got soccer's Tiger Woods. We've got soccer's Dale Earnhardt Jr. Yep. We've got soccer. Like all those sports, they have guy.
Yeah, they do at least. And again, the fact that he's American, he is the child of two college soccer players. One was an indoor professional player, and they both met at George Mason. The kid got to live in England for a year at age 7, which I think is huge, needless to say, because you get immersed in that culture at a young age. And he learned by playing a game called futsal. Do you guys understand what futsal is? F-U-T-S-A-L?
I've heard.
It's five-on-five indoor soccer with a deadened soccer ball. So it's a little bit smaller than a size 4 ball, which is, five being the regulation, 4 being a little smaller. And it doesn't have the bounce in it. So you have to learn to control the ball on your foot much tighter. And you can see it. You can see that this kid played futsal just by watching how he plays.
So let me ask you this. And if he's so good, last night, tie game, 2 minutes to go, they took him out.
He's 18 years old. He weighs 140 pounds soaking wet.
Yeah, it's 5'8".
He was the first time that I saw him play for the U.S. national team where it looked like this is a boy among men. But don't forget, he had just played 90 minutes Thursday night, 4 days before. You know, it takes a lot.
Not even, that they didn't trust the him, US, it was just a fatigue
thing. Clint Dempsey didn't play at all last night. The best scorer in American history up to this point. One goal behind Lynn Donovan, but I think Lynn Donovan's a fraud.
Michael Bradley's close, too. How about that goal
last night? Michael Bradley's goal is one of the great soccer goals. Whenever you can jump a pass at midfield, take two touches, and chip the goalie off his line, that's a world-class goal.
He just scored from, I saw this on Twitter. I don't remember who said it, and I'm sure you won't appreciate this reference, but Steph Curry range was really his goal last night.
I can appreciate that. It only counted for one goal, though. It's not a three-pointer. But it was an exceptional play. It was a heads-up play. I've never been a big fan of Michael Bradley. I like Michael Bradley, but not as a superstar. Not like what this kid has. He has charisma. He's well-grounded. The parents did a great job with this kid. I just can't control. You can tell how excited I am about him.
So before we wrap it up real quick.
They don't play again until September.
I know it's tough for you, but real quick. Going through the World Cup qualifiers, I think I saw like 80% now their odds of making it.
Yeah.
Where do they stand? What are their chances at getting into the World Cup? What are we looking
at
as
the
situation?
There's no doubt that Mexico and the U.S. will both be in the World Cup.
So
the two best teams.
They haven't clinched, but they've air quotes clinched.
Correct. Yeah, they're definitely not in danger of not getting in, which is better. You know what I mean? You just want to get into the tournament.
Week 16.
New England Patriots.
Week 13, 14.
Yeah.
You got to run through a bad Miami team and a bad Jets team, and then you're good.
They got a couple more qualifiers, but they're going to be fine. And I really like some of the other young players that are performing.
Well, look, they should get in. It's a weak pool. Trinidad and Tobago, Honduras, Panama, Costa Rica, and Mexico's good. But, I mean, those are smaller countries.
Yeah, but you can't pick where you're from.
No, I know, but...
Okay.
You know, the Patriots, again, Patriots don't pick. They're from the AFC East, but they should win that thing every year.
It's like the NCAA basketball tournament. You just got to get in first, and then you get your seeding and your pairing, and then it's a luck of the draw kind of a thing. And there's a lot of politics, as you guys have probably found, that FIFA is not exactly the most pristine governing body in sport. That's right. But good stuff, guys.
What do you think, Alex? Enough soccer talk till September?
Just one question. How much, because you talk about the MLS being this league, this top five league, I guess. But not here, at least it isn't. There is.
What do you mean here?
Like in New England, in the New England area.
The New England Revolution averaged between 18,000 and 22,000.
But but if you compare it to the other four sports, or the other four sports, I don't think it compares.
They kick hockey's ass.
The Bruins.
In this country. No, they kick hockey. Just take soccer versus hockey.
No, and hockey.
In this
hockey is regional. I'll give you that. But how much pressure is on this U.S. team to grow the sport in this country from popularity?
Anytime you put that U.S. jersey on. There's pressure. You're a salesperson for the game, just like I have been. Guy, there's nobody in sports at my age that has been as passionate about professional soccer in this country. There just isn't. I grew up watching the Boston Astros, the Boston Minutemen, the New England T-Men. Okay, I played for the Junior
Astros.
Those are
terrible names.
Horrible names. Those are the 60s and 70s guys. Come on, you read about those decades in your history books. But all I have to say is one thing: the goal of the game is to grow the game.
Yeah.
They have grown the game. It is here to stay. It's not going anywhere. And I actually heard on sports radio in Boston them actually talking about this kid on Friday, Christian Pulisic. And when you start making it into the banter, the daily banter of sports talk radio, you've made it. Yeah. What more do you need? What more proof do you need? Mm-hmm. You need 130 million people to watch the Super Bowl? No. You need them to watch the World Cup.
All right. Yeah, so I think enough soccer talk to get us through the summer. Jimmy Young, thanks for coming on and getting all that. We'll talk to you again in September. Got another qualifier. There you go. All right. And I'd like to thank Jimmy. I'd like to thank Mike Shaley, Mike Zago for coming on earlier in the show. We will be back next week. As it looks right now, two shows next week because the NBA draft is on Thursday. The NHL draft is on Friday, so we'll be with you Monday. And if the plans hold up, we'll be with you Friday as well. So until next Monday, he's Alex Lubitz. I'm Alex Barth. This has been Callin' It, brought to you by Snap Call Sports. Follow us on Twitter, and I will talk to you next week.
You've been listening to Callin' It. This episode has been brought to you by Snap Call Sports. Snap Call, the game within the game. Available for iPhone or Android.